Welcome into the Inside Slant here on the Sports Objective. I'm Dave Richmond with a nap. We're back on. Hey, Bubba, you awake?
I am. I don't know how, but I am. It's unbelievable. I still can't believe what transpired last night in Tulsa, but nothing to do but move on, and hopefully things will go differently for our Pirates next week. But very excited still to talk about week 9 in college football. A lot of great games taking place today, and one of those is down in Atlanta with the 20th ranked Coastal Carolina Chanticleers taking on Georgia State at the former Turner Field. And right now, to discuss that matchup, on the call for ESPN today, Mike Corey. Mike, welcome back into the show.
Thanks, guys. What's going on? How you doing? I know. After last night, not as great, but boy, that was a crazy one. I had to wake up and see what happened. But now it should be a big day in college football today. And you know, I can't believe it's almost November. I mean, this is just it's amazing.
Well, just thinking about that yesterday, Mike, I'm just happy that, and maybe I should regret thinking that yesterday before the game, I was happy that we were playing football games. But after last night. I'm happy that we've been able to get a season in. I think we talked about that last time, about the very fact that somehow, some way, I didn't know that we're going to have a season. So the fact that we're getting games in, and then bowl games in the college football playoff, and we have a couple conferences back, so with the Big Ten and all. So but you have a really big matchup today with Coastal Carolina and obviously Georgia State. Both teams have looked really well, it's going to be huge.
Yeah, no, it's going to be big. I mean, Coastal's 5-0, 20th in the country. Their quarterback should be back today, Grayson McCall. He was injured and didn't play last week. But their backup, Fred Payton, I mean, he's played a lot. I mean, he's thrown for over 2,400 yards in his career, so he's certainly capable. And they won last week, and, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing what they can do today. Georgia State on the other side, too. They're a 1-point overtime loss and then a 7-point loss to Louisiana away from being 4-0 themselves. So they're really good. It's two programs that haven't really been in the FBS for all that long, but it's a really, really good matchup. And I'm starting to see a lot more of these teams, especially this year, you know, make some headway and also show people around the country who they are. You know what I mean? Like, Coastal Carolina has been and will be as of today on national TV every single game of their season. I mean, this is their sixth game of the year. They've been on the flagship on ESPN twice, and then ESPN2, and then this will be their second on ESPNU, and then on Fox Sports 1. So I didn't know much about these guys, right? I don't think anybody did until this season.
Yeah, Mike, taking a look at this matchup, I know you and I were discussing this earlier in the week, just talking about this matchup, and you talk about that big addition for the Chanticleers, getting quarterback Grayson McCall, who performed so well this season as just a redshirt freshman, correct?
Yeah.
So, looking at this matchup, Coastal Carolina is one, Georgia State, and they have really put up a lot of numbers offensively. They have not done so defensively. However, they did really slow down East Carolina, holding the Pirates to just 3 field goals that day in their 49-29 victory over East Carolina. But, in addition to that, you have Coastal, who has been much more well-rounded. So what's your take on some of these matchups within the matchup?
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at it here. I got my board. It's like they have a really good running back, Coastal, C.J. Marable, who he's tied for he's 16th in the country in terms of 7 total touchdowns right now. I mean, he can rush it in. He can receive it. I mean, he's had a lot of good receiving yards as well, 3 receiving touchdowns this year too. So he's a threat in both areas. They've got a couple of really good wide receivers. I mean, over the last 2 weeks, they've had a 72-yard touchdown each week. Sam Denmark last week, Javon Hiley, another guy who had it a couple weeks ago. Actually, it was Isaiah Likely, who's their tight end, who had a 72-yard touchdown. So, you know, they can stretch the field and they can catch you if you're not prepared for it. I mean, I think the Georgia State defense is pretty good. I mean, they shouldn't be letting up those kind of plays, but it's happened. So, you know, combine that with a pretty good offensive line for Coastal and, you know, what they've done, they can be explosive. So I'm going to look out and keep an eye on some of the wide receiver and the tight end matchups, especially to see if Coastal gets some big plays on them again. Because if they do, that's been the reason for some of their success.
In Georgia State defensively, they have been really stout against the run. It's just been that pass defense, unlike against Arkansas State, where Arkansas State put up 59 points, but Georgia State held them to something like 40 or 50 yards on the ground. They just couldn't slow the Red Wolves down through the air.
That's it. It's been the rush defense has been outstanding. So Georgia State has given up only a total of only 148 yards rushing in the last three games. So that's crazy. I mean, so you're right. I mean, but it's, you know, one or the other, right? And I mean, if they had an unbelievable pass defense, they wouldn't be giving up any points, because that's hardly anything rushing the ball. So we'll see what happens today. But I would assume that if that's the case, Coastal's going to try to take some more shots and try to see if they can get them on a couple of those plays, because they've only been averaging giving up 50 yards rushing a game.
And Mike, with obviously with the undefeated record that Coastal has and ranked, I think this has got to be the highest. I think this is the only time they've been ranked. So, but what are your, my memory serves me right. Yeah. What is your thoughts on if they run the table, how high do you think they could go? I know it's a hard, they've got to still get their hand a few games left and all that. But if they run the table, do you think they could be a top 10 team, or it's probably going to be more like somewhere in the high teens, like 13, 12?
Yeah, it'll be like a 12, 13, something like that. I mean, you know what this reminds me of is the UCF year, you know, where they were undefeated. I mean, geez, what they had, like 25 wins or I don't know what it was. They were known. I mean, they were well known at that point. So, you know, it's just the way it's going to be. I mean, I just think people need to really stop worrying about, like, something like this, so this kind of a team, or even like a Cincinnati. Like, I mean, good for Cincinnati. I've done a lot of their games over the years. I mean, they're in the top 10 right now. But they're not going to the college football playoff. Like, they're just not. Like, I hate to say it like that, because I would love them to, but they're not going to do it. They're not going to be in the playoff. Like, when you have to look at it, like, the reasons that I hate to say it like this either too, but I'm just telling the truth. It's about money and the big time teams and the big mashups and the ratings and all that kind of stuff. That's what's going to happen. That's what's going to drive, you know, putting those teams in those positions. And we see it every single year. They don't want an 8-team playoff. They don't want to see TCU versus, you know, UCF or somebody that happened to pull off an upset in the semifinals, you know, if they do something like that. They don't want that. Like, that's not going to happen, you know. So it's great for teams like the – you know, the teams in the American, which I think are just as good as some of the other power teams. I hate even using the Power Five and all that crap, but they're not going to go to the playoff. They would get one of those New Year's Six bowl games. I mean, if they're the highest ranked team, you know, in the group of five and win their conference, you know, they'll get a really good bowl. I mean, it's going to be really good, but they're not going to ever say, you know, Coastal Carolina is going to be better than Penn State, you know what I mean? Or Ohio State, even if they have a loss or two, you know what I mean? It just doesn't seem, I mean, right. I mean, I would give them a lot of credit no matter what. But when it comes down to it, that's the reason why I think they do what they do and where the rankings and who gets selected for games and that kind of stuff. You just have to look at it from that perspective. And I know that's not always the right way, but I'm telling you, that's how it works.
No question about it. It's not about the way it should be. It's the way it is, right? I mean, that's the way – that is, and the fact that Cincinnati and another thing is Cincinnati has to run the table to have any kind of outside chance. They're not going to get it, and if they lose a game, which I think they'll lose one in the American, they're definitely done.
Right. I mean, I don't even know. They got a big one today against Memphis, you know, so that's going to be tough. And I'm just trying to look at the rankings right now. I mean, you know, Clemson, Alabama, 6-0, 5-0. I mean, here's Ohio State. They played one game, you know, of course, with everything that's going on, they haven't even played, but I get it. But they're third right now, 1-0. Notre Dame's 5-0. Georgia. I mean, how good is Georgia, you know, 3-1. Oklahoma State, 4-0. Cincinnati, 4-0. I'm sorry. I don't see any way that, you know, I mean, unless one of those top teams loses, but we even see that when they lose, they usually lose to a good team so they don't get dropped too much. You know what I mean? So if a Clemson, Alabama, Ohio State, or Notre Dame, you know, lose to like a really good team, they're not going to go that far down. I mean, it's hard to move in there, and it's even harder to move up. But, you know, we'll see. I mean, Oklahoma State could lose. I mean, maybe Georgia could lose another. But, you know, I think they're going to be right there on the outside. You know, I just do. Unfortunately, we'll see.
Mike, last thing for you, as we begin to wrap this up, I know your focus is obviously on Coastal Carolina and Georgia State, but you started to reference some of those other teams. So with the matchups we have today, you referenced the Buckeyes. They're taking on a Penn State team looking to bounce back from what happened in Bloomington last week. That should be a tremendous game tonight in Happy Valley. And then also you have number 6 Oklahoma State, who really struggled with Tulsa, who we referenced at the top of the show. They're taking on Texas tonight, late this afternoon, 4:00 in Stillwater. So what are your thoughts about those and maybe some of the other matchups you have an eye on?
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now here. So I Oklahoma State, right. I mean, I could see them getting upset. You know, I could see Texas winning that game. So that's gonna knock them down, right? I mean, they're 4-0, number 6 in the country. I don't know, possibly, but I could totally see Texas winning that game. Ohio State, I don't see any trouble. I really don't. I mean, I get it. You know, Penn State, it's a tough year. I mean, they lost that first game. They're at home, but I think Ohio State wins pretty easily. I mean, they'll be 2-0, I think. You know, that's my feeling there. So I don't know. I don't, everybody loves Ohio State. I mean, and they're really good. So it would be tough for Penn State fans. They're dropping 0-2 to start, but I think that's what's going to happen. Looking through the rest of it, I mean, Notre Dame, no trouble. Georgia Tech today. I don't see any problems there. Georgia, I just did Kentucky last week. I did Kentucky and Missouri. Kentucky offense was just so inept. I don't know what their problem was. I mean, it was terrible. I mean, they finally picked it up in the second half. I mean, but there's no way they beat Georgia, in my opinion. So I got Georgia there. Clemson, even without Lawrence, I mean, they still beat Boston College, I think. So, you know, and then Alabama, no trouble with Mississippi State at home. I mean, that's a laugher. And then Florida, who takes on Missouri, who I saw, so I can at least attribute to that. Not quite sure what Florida's deal is. They've been off for a while, all the COVID stuff. You know, Missouri, got a really good young quarterback. You're going to have to put up some points. I think it's going to be a little difficult. I'd probably give Florida the edge in that game. But, you know, I like Missouri where they could be down the road, just not this year.
Well, Mike, I know that you got to run. Thank you so much for the visit, and good luck on the call today. And obviously, we'll see how it's going to be a really good football game, one that I have on the calendar, so to speak. And definitely before we let you go, how can people follow your work?
Yeah, thanks a lot. I'm on the social, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at Mike Corey Sports. And yeah, we'll be looking forward to getting on the call today, 12:00 on ESPNU with Coastal Carolina and Georgia State. But always good talking to you guys, catching up. I hope it's a fun college football Saturday for you, and we'll do it again.
All right, sounds good. Have a safe trip over to the over to what was Turner Field.
Right. I know. I'm looking forward to going over there.
All right. Take care.
All right, you too.
Bye-bye. All right, appreciate Mike Corey, as always, for ESPN. Appreciate the visit there. And I know that the big broadcast today, that's going to be a great game, Bubba. I'll tell you what, I thought that we were going to be on the winning side of things, a W in the win column, but a lot of great football games today as we do the inside slant. It's unbelievable. Great. There's some where you have a couple good matchups, but it seems like if you look from top to bottom, a lot of great matchups today, a lot of top 25 action.
Yeah, really looking forward to this matchup in Atlanta. Like you said, Coastal Carolina, they're ranked for the first time in their program's history. They were able to pull out a win in the second half last week against Georgia Southern, overcoming some adversity with Grayson McCall, their quarterback, out. So with him back in the saddle today, it will be very interesting to see how this one goes against a very solid Georgia State team. Georgia State, like we said, has been very stout against the run, but not so much against the pass. Coastal Carolina's attack, it is well-balanced. But I would say it's more built off the run for sure. Not necessarily the same way as the Pirates attack, but it is one that is probably run-based. And so it will be interesting to see if the Chanticleers are able to throw the ball effectively if Georgia State does, in fact, slow down their ground attack.
You know what I was thinking about a couple of days ago, Bubba, getting ready for our show, knowing that about Coastal Carolina that we're going to have Mike on. The very fact that Coastal Carolina, obviously we know about their baseball team, right? Think about their baseball team and what a great story that was for college baseball. You and I and Kyle, and there's so many people that watch this show that love, obviously, college baseball. And I've always talked about how I think they're, as a brand, college baseball is way underrated. And you think about Coastal Carolina in football should have that same opportunity. Would they beat Alabama, Clemson? I don't think so. I mean, but they should be a low seed, you know, and in a playoff. I'm not saying they should be in the Final Four the way we have right now, the structure, but I feel like with the, let's say that they ran the table, there's still a lot of football left, but I just, I hate it. I hate it for our student athletes who, they have a really good football team. They have a really good football program and their up and coming team. You were talking about Georgia State, who we played. They're a really good football team. And I think that, anyway, it's just sad that college football could be way better than it is as far as making money. And we're the customers, the fans are the customers. And I understand, but yet I don't understand why you wouldn't give the fans what they want.
Yeah, I agree. And I would disagree a little bit with Mike. And as far as the point he was making, that comparison between Coastal Carolina and UCF, because UCF's schedule, in my opinion, was a little more challenging. But nonetheless, Coastal Carolina has an excellent football team. Jamie Chadwell's a tremendous coach, and going to be interesting to see where the Chanticleer's season goes from this point on. I was kind of looking at things as here shortly we'll be joined by Mike Corey's color analyst. A lot of times they're not working together today, as Renee and Golia down in San Marcos on the call Louisiana. It's Raging Cajuns are a 6-point favorite against Jake Spavadal's Texas State Bobcats, 8 o'clock tonight on ESPNU. But it's going to be interesting to get Renee's take on the Chanticleers, because I know he saw them last week in Conway. He was on the call for that Georgia Southern game where they were able to win without their starting quarterback.
Yeah, and Bubba, by the way, I know this is non-football related. I just saw our friend from Carolina Preps, Chris Hughes, just has on Twitter that one of my favorite actors, if you're a James Bond fan, he just posted that Sean Connery has passed. So if you love 007 like I do, I think he's the best James Bond ever. And sorry, I know we're doing a football show, but very sad to hear that. In fact, they're having a lot of trouble with the 25th Bond film being released because of COVID. They pushed it back again to April of next year. No Time to Die. But anyway, sad to lose Sean Connery. That's a big one for sure. And the especially for that franchise, he's the one that put that franchise on the map. So,
yeah, definitely. Okay. It was also Sean Connery, right, that was in The Rock?
Yes. So, yes, that's correct.
Because when I think of that, sometimes I listen to the BGP, the Black and Gold podcast for App State, and yes, they call Kid Brewer Stadium The Rock. So right, it's funny to hear, I think it's sharp what they did with the intro to their podcast with Sean Connery from the movie Welcome to the Rock, like they used at the ball game.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's smooth, and all those early – I mean, to me, Daniel Craig, and not to get off – we'll get back on the hinges really fast here, but I think Daniel Craig has really surprised me. I thought, obviously, Sean Connery will always be my number one Bond, but Daniel Craig has moved in the second spot. For sure, growing up, Roger Moore was big when – he was the Bond when I was a little kid. I loved him, but I think for sure Sean Connery has always been the best. Speaking of the best, Rennie's here backstage. We'll see if we can get him on. And I don't know if he's a James Bond fan or not. Rennie, how are you, man?
Good. How you guys doing? Finally made it back on.
Awesome. Yeah, we just learned here on Twitter that I don't know if you're a James Bond fan, Sean Connery has passed away. So very sad.
Yeah, that's, I didn't hear that. That's horrible, man. 2020. I mean, what? I mean, it's just, we got to get out of this year, right? It's 2021. We're almost there.
You know, I was going to bail on Bubba, but I knew Rennie was coming on. So I was like, I can't.
There you go.
Yeah. We had your a guy that you've done a lot of games. We just had Mike on. Now we have you on. I appreciate you guys so much. And I told you last year I was walking in the new press box and I was literally walking to the bathroom and I heard Rennie's voice. And I was like, man, I could easily just walk in there. And but I wouldn't do that to you guys. But you guys are the best. You guys are the best.
You know that. I hope I make it back to ECU, to Greensville. I love that place, man.
Now, come on, Dave. You know you're trying to do something like that to get our credential revoked and then probably get arrested as well.
Not at all. Not at all. Those two guys, first of all, I have way too much respect for both of you guys. I would love just to being able to, like, talk, like, 2 minutes on the air with you guys, not to to crash the party. But, Rennie, speaking of crashing the party, what did you think about that Pirate game last night, my friend?
I feel so bad for the players. Mike Houston, who I have, you know, so much respect for, he's doing it the right way. And you guys see it. He's turning the program around. I mean, it looked like a fumble to me, guys. I don't know if the American Athletic Conference, if they've come out with a statement or Mike Oresko. I don't know. It's just, if you're an ECU fan, you're just, and I did go through Twitter a little bit, and they're just, you know, they're devastated, and they played well. They should have won that ball game, and but I guess that's sports, right? It's just one of those things you have to deal with. Listen, in the long run, I think it's going to make them better. I think it's going to pull them together as a team. Yeah. I really do. It's going to give them something to rally around, and it's tough though. You want to, you deserve the win. You should have got the win. That's what it looked like to me. But I think in the long run, it'll be better for them as a team.
You know, Rennie.
Go ahead, Dave.
I'm sorry, I was just going to make a quick point, and I'll toss it to you, Bubba. The Georgia State game, they didn't play up to par. That was a 50-50 game. I'm not disrespecting Georgia State. I think they're a good program, and I think East Carolina is a good program. And we didn't play well at all. Your partner, Mike Corey, I know, is doing the game in Atlanta today. But the Georgia State game, something happened after that game. And that week of practice after Georgia State, I said it last or early this morning, a few hours, whenever it's been, after the game, I said the fact that after that Georgia State game, I'll never forget how Coach Houston talked about how they had a good week of practice. And I was wondering how the team would respond. I really think this team has gotten even closer, like a band of brothers. I hate to use that term. It's overused so much, but I think they really have. And I think that if you look at it, you had a win against USF. You had a 4-point loss to Navy. If Holton Ahlers is in there, I really believe that we win that game. And then last night, I feel like we won the game. So it feels like three straight, even though it's only one win and two losses over the last three games.
No, I would agree with you. And I think the thing with Georgia State is, I think the Sun Belt is so much better than people want to give them credit for. And I think even the players, even the kids in the American and in other conferences, you think to yourself, oh, it's Georgia State. They're not the best program. And I think, we can go in there and beat them. So I think that was an issue, because I think Georgia State is much improved. And so I think that was a learning lesson for that team. I agree with you. Without Holton Ahlers for Navy was really tough. It's crazy. Everything that we've been through in 2020 with COVID and just everything going on, and then everything that's happened to this team in these games, boy, this team is going through a huge life lesson in a short period. And I think for the program, I think in the long run, I think Mike Houston has them going in the right direction in the right way. And I just think this team has grown up and will grow up in a hurry in this season. What's going on here?
Rennie, I know last week you had the opportunity to see Coastal Carolina play, albeit without quarterback Grayson McCall. So what was your take on the Chanticleers, the way they were able to overcome some adversity last week in Conway, win a close ball game against Georgia Southern? And how do you see this one playing out today in Atlanta? Because you look at Georgia State, they're very potent offensively with Quad Brown and everything they have, the offensive skill positions. But then, you know, defensively, they've been stout against the run, but they've really struggled to defend the pass.
So, yeah, in this COVID year, I've actually had Coastal twice because I had a cancellation and I got slid in late on a Coastal game. So I've been up there twice. It is a good team. It really is. They are, and I tell people this, and you think to yourself, well, every team should be like this, but it's really not in college football. There's just so much going on. This team loves to play. They have fun. And I think a lot of teams out there, a lot of kids, they kind of lose that. And that team has not. They love playing. They have fun. And Grayson McCall is everything that everyone thinks he is. He is that good. And so I give Fred Payton all the credit in the world who stepped in last week and got them the win over Georgia Southern. Now, they're in a unique situation there in that Fred Payton and their other backup, they both have, I think, 6 or 7 starts under their belt because they both rotated the year before while Grayson McCall was getting redshirted. So that's a luxury when you have to sit your starter that you can bring someone there with experience. Fred Payton throws the ball really well downfield. He just doesn't have the dynamic running ability and that option that Grayson McCall does. So, but they got the win, I think, with McCall back. I think the biggest thing, if you're a Coastal fan, is now, okay, does this team, can they take a deep breath? Can Jamie Chadwell keep them from reading, quote-unquote, reading the press clippings? They're going to be on game day today. There's all kinds of national stories out there about them. If you start, feeling too good about yourself, that you're too good, that's when you will get knocked off. In Georgia State, we just talked about them. They're the type of team that can do that. So I think they will have them ready to go today. I think it helps them that it's a noon game today. They're not going to see, the game day special. They're not going to see that. They're not going to sit around until an 8 o'clock game and be able to read the, watch those videos and read those press clippings. So I think it's really good that it's a noon game. But it's a good team. They're for real. They deserve their ranking. And it's kind of interesting because, again, you guys know they transitioned in 2017 from FCS to FBS. And so they've kind of gotten beaten up in the Sun Belt. So I said it on air last week. It's almost kind of like their revenge tour. I think Georgia Southern was 5-1 against them. I want to say Arkansas State was something like that as well. Louisiana, teams that they just have not beaten. And now they're just kind of like, here we go. And it all started on the road. And when they took it to Kansas, and that's the other thing about Grayson McCall as well. His first college start, and you can say, yeah, it's Kansas, but it's on the road. It's prime timing. It's a Big 12 team, and he went in there, and that team dominated that game. And they have really rallied from that. And then, of course, the walk-off win against Louisiana was huge. Whenever you can get your college kicker to put it through the uprights like that on national TV to basically walk off and get the win, that's huge. So this team's in a good position, but, they have to be careful on the road for Georgia State. And then it's funny because we just got our assignments a couple of days ago. I'm back in Myrtle Beach next week again, so I will have them next week as well against South Alabama. So I will know this team inside and out before this season's over.
Rennie, one of the things that I heard many years ago, there was a joke about how the reason why the Sun Belt Conference was started is because the Southeastern Conference needed to have some way to have a second, if you will, FCS kind of game. And I don't think you can – that was, I guess – early 2000s when the Sun Belt was started. I don't think there's no way in the world that you could say that that's the case now. This is not I think there's some, not the Alabamas of the world, obviously, but there's some teams in the Southeastern Conference that would be upset by an Arkansas State or Georgia State. There's a lot of great teams, obviously with Coastal.
No doubt about it. And so the thing is, and you guys have seen the transformation just in how big high school sports has become and just how many athletes are. There's just so many good players and athletes in the South, and there's just not enough Power Five schools to go. So the thing with like the Sun Belt players, which is fascinating to me, and I believe this wholeheartedly, is, growing up, all those kids, they want to go to the Alabamas and the Georgias and the South Carolinas, the Floridas, the schools you're just talking about, but there's just not enough room for them. Well, so there's really good talent that just kind of get left behind, and they end up going to the Sun Belt schools. So now you got a really good player that maybe just missed out on going to one of those big, big schools, right? And now they got a chip on their shoulder, and now you got a bunch of those kids, and that's what the Sun Belt is, a bunch of really good athletes, that play really good football that have a chip on their shoulder to believe I should have been at those big time schools. But now they're going to these other programs like the Coastals, like the Georgia States, like the Louisianas, and they're playing really good and they're knocking off some of these big schools. So I just think it's great for college football, but there's just so much talent in the South.
Rainey, before we move on and talk about some other games, including the one that you're calling today down in San Marcos between the Raging Cajuns and Texas State, you know, looking down the road for Coastal, certainly none of these games are by any stretch of the imagination gimmies. But at the same time, a couple that really stand out, November 21st against App State, and then also December 5th against the Liberty Flames.
Yeah, those are the you took it right. You're reading it right out of my head, Bubba. Those are the two games. Now, you don't, and it's coach speak and it's cliche. You do have to take the season 1 week at a time. You have to, or you will get knocked off. But if you're looking at that schedule, you said it. Those are the two games. It's App State and it's Liberty. And I'll tell you what, Liberty is not getting enough credit nationally. I don't believe. I had them last year up at BYU. Hugh Freeze, like him or hate him, you know, obviously what happened at Ole Miss, been through a lot. He's a good coach. He can coach football. Liberty, that program has a ton of money. You know, they say they want to be the BYU of the East Coast, you know, a religious institution, a lot of funds. I haven't been to Lynchburg yet, but anyone I speak to that's been there said their facilities are phenomenal. So that's a team just watch out for as well. But yeah. And then of course, App State, we all know what App State is, not only in the Sun Belt, but in college football. And so it's kind of funny for Coastal, right? Because they get this win today. They're the ones with the bullseye on them, right? They were always, you know, doing the hunting, trying to knock big teams off. Now they're going to be the hunted. So it's going to be fascinating. But yes, those are the two games that you have to watch out for if you're a Coastal Carolina fan.
And Rennie, one of the things that I'm frustrated with college football is the very fact that you see a team like Coastal Carolina. What a great story. You hear a Liberty. Those are, if you know anything about college football, those are teams that you can tell that the programs are being built from the ground up, and they're being built like a house the right way with the right foundation, et cetera. We could use all the house analogies in the world. But the very fact that in college football, those two programs this year have no chance at any kind of playoff is really sad. I wish there was some way that finally the powers that be in college football, you have right now with the NFL number one, right?
Yeah.
College football is always number two. They could have a chance to be number one in America for the number one sport if they really finally said, oh, man, do you realize that we could make even more money for the conferences, that we finally give the customers, who aka the fans, what they really want? Yeah. And a team like Coastal Carolina winning the college baseball, the World Series a few years back, and that was such a great story. And think about the story I was thinking about a couple days ago, the very fact of if this was basketball season with March Madness, what a great story Coastal Carolina would be. And I was like, but oh, well, we're college football. So it's a great story here now in the regular season. And even if they go undefeated, they go undefeated, and it's not, that's a great season, guys, but no dice as far as anything beyond that.
Well, and that's it. I mean, if you're a group of five program right now, realistically, you're the best thing you can play for is a New Year's Six bowl game, which is great. That's a huge thing. It is, but I hear you. You know, I thought this year with the COVID year being a one-off type of year with just, you know, mayhem, that if they were going to do something, go ahead and do it now. Let every conference champion in, see what happens. You can go back next year. No one's going to say anything. You say, oh, I did it because of what was going on with COVID. So I thought this was a perfect excuse to give them a chance. Maybe they're afraid that it would be too successful, right? I mean, who knows what they're thinking. But I'm with you, Dave. I think eventually they will expand. I've said it. I'm a proponent of giving all put all five Power Five champions, put them in, right? Okay, that gives that conference championship something. It's huge, right? So all five powers get in. I think you put the Power Five, the group of six, the group of five, you put there the team that would go to the New Year's Six, you put them in the playoffs, so you can do that ranking the same way. That gives you six, and then you go two at-larges. It can be anyone. Listen, is that ideal if you're a group of five team? No, but at least it gets you to the table. So we'll see what they do. But I agree with you. It's tough, but you know what? These teams, I think these players, they're playing – for conference championships first and foremost. And then if they can get to a great bowl game. And that was some great news yesterday. You saw, I know you guys saw the menu, if you will, come out of the college football bowl games that'll be out. I think it's 37 now. So I'm excited. I love bowl season. You know, there's some that had a cancel for this year, but hey, 37 with the playoff games, with the championship, still a lot of football in the postseason. So, you know, all in all, guys, to this point right now, with everything that's going on in our country with COVID, I would tell you that, in my opinion, college football has been a raging success. Yeah, we've had postponements. Yeah, you're going to get some cancellations now because the Big Ten, Pac-12, there's no wiggle room. But all by and large, I couldn't be more thrilled than what's happening in college football.
Rini, transitioning back to what you have coming up tonight, 8:00 on ESPNU, you have Billy Napier's Raging Cajuns 4-1. Obviously, they made headlines in that opening week, taking down Iowa State, who's been so good. And then you had Texas State. Yes, they're 1-6, but Jake Spavadal, if you've watched him play at all, they've been competitive against a lot of pretty good football teams like BC. And obviously that game was on the road. So what's your take on this one? Do you see the Bobcats, you know, giving the Raging Cajuns any type of scare?
Listen, they should have, to answer your one question, they should have beaten Boston College. They had that game won. They let it slip away. They are probably, I'm going to go out on a limb and say, they're the best 1-6 team in the country. They ran into BYU last week. Okay, BYU is another one that's for real this year that's playing some pretty good football. I love Jake Spavadal. I think he's a great coach. Listen, he's in his second year. All right, I don't have the exact numbers, but I think they have 50. Yes, 50 new players on that team. If you count, freshmen that are now eligible to play, transfers, JUCOs, basically no spring ball. So you're dealing with all that stuff, just trying to get going. And they're one of those teams. I can't believe, guys, they've played 7 games. I mean, that's amazing in and of itself when you look at that. Their last 5 games, guys, have been on the road. When they play tonight at home, 49 days straight they've been on the road before they play tonight. That's amazing, and they've redone their schedule. When they played that early game, I wish I had their schedule in front of me, the early game in the season, they lost all their tight ends, okay, because of COVID testing. All their tight ends. Jake Spavadal didn't say, we're not going to play. We lost our tight end group. They said, we're going to go ahead and play anyway. And, oh, by the way, they were all false positives. So he lost all his tight ends for false positives, but he went ahead and played. So I love that mentality. They understand you're not losing eligibility of players this year. They're just trying to get guys reps. There's a lot of guys that need experience. So it is what it is for them this year. Obviously, they would love to win, but they are learning in this program. This is one program, guys, when we circle back next year, let's talk about them, because I believe you're going to see, you always look at improvements from one year to the next. You know, UCF used to have those big improvements. I guarantee you Texas State next year is one of those teams that's going to have the biggest improvement in the country. Now, their quarterback, Brady McBride, if you haven't seen this kid, really exciting. He's a Memphis transfer. He gets compared to a lot of guys. He kind of gets compared to Manziel. He kind of runs around in the pocket. He has an arm delivery. He's one of these guys that can deliver it high, medium, sidearm. He does it all. He's kind of a gunslinger. He'll throw it back across his body. He can get the ball intercepted. But I love Jake Spavadal. He compared, and I'm a big golf fan as well. He compared it to a golfer. He's like, do you want your quarterback to just be that kind of, steady golfer that's going to get a bunch of pars and just do the job? Or do you want the guy that can go out there and knock off 3 birdies in a row, get an eagle? And oh, by the way, yeah, he made triple bogey a hole because he's trying to make a shot that most people won't. That's kind of Brady McBride, and I kind of love that mentality out of your coach saying, let your quarterback go out there. And again, he's young. He's going to get reps as well. They're a fun team. They got some good running backs, Brock Sturges, Kelvin Hill, Jeter. These guys have all transferred for some big schools. He's got a lot of transfers on that team. Talking about guys with chips on their shoulder, right? You go to big programs, it kind of doesn't work out. You kind of go back to Texas home. So, I like Texas State. With everything I just said, Bubba, I think Louisiana wins the game. It's a good team. You talked about them knocking off Iowa State, and they knocked off Iowa State kind of what I talked about before with ECU, kind of, don't let your guard down on Georgia State. I think all those Big 12 schools Big 12 schools let their guard down on the Sun Belt. And I think what happened was those Sun Belt schools showed how many athletes they have in their speed. Because if you watch that Iowa State Louisiana game, that was the difference. Louisiana just looked like they had way more athletes all over the field. So I like Louisiana tonight. Billy Napier's a great coach. The question is, can Louisiana keep him? I think he's gone. I think they're going to come and grab him. I'm kind of surprised he didn't get nabbed up last year. If you're into analytics, he's a huge analytics guy. I've had unbelievable conversations with him about analytics. You know, every program out there has an analytics book that they use. Some coaches use it more than others. Billy Napier uses analytics 100%. He's the head coach, but he also calls the play, so he knows the down and distance. So every time he makes a call on 3rd and 6 or 4th and 2, and depending on the score and where you are in the field and what his book says, he lets analytics, he believes analytics 100%. So analytics makes the calls with him. I think it's fascinating when you watch Louisiana play.
And with the football you've seen so far, I know that we had like the Big Ten last week joining the party, but who do you like right now? If you had to pick the Final Four, who do you like right now? I know I'm putting you on the spot, but.
Well, I mean, Alabama, right? I think they're in a good shape. I've heard some people say without Waddle, listen, yes, you lose a lot without Waddle, but it's Alabama. Okay. They're going to put someone in their offense as a machine. So I like Bama. You know, without much of the Big Ten, I mean, you haven't seen it, but you got to put Ohio State in there. That's my second. I would love to kind of see, you know, you talked about it. You know, I don't think they're going to get a shot, but you would love to see a team like Cincy. They got a big one with Memphis today, so I'm curious how that one plays out. So Ohio State, Alabama, who am I missing? Let me see. I think Georgia still has a chance. I think Texas A&M still has a chance. Okay.
What about Clemson?
Clemson, of course. It just popped in my head. Of course, Clemson. Listen, I think Boston College is a much better team. But I think Clemson gets that win. You know, I think he'll be fine. The COVID thing, I think we kind of get a little nuts with it, but I think Trevor Lawrence will be fine. I think he'll play. I think when it's all said and done, that the onset of symptoms, guys, was probably going to be on Tuesday. I think he'll be cleared on Thursday. He'll probably practice with the team, walkthroughs on Friday, and play against Notre Dame next week. So, yeah, so I would go, you know, it's kind of stock. Clemson, Alabama, Ohio State. The fourth is the big one, though, right? Who gets in that fourth spot will be interesting. So I guess we shall see. That should play itself out.
What do you think would have to happen talking about that fourth spot for a team like 7th-ranked Cincinnati, Luke Fickell's ball club, to maybe be able to squeak into that and you know, get that opportunity that the Group of Five has wanted forever?
Well, the good thing for them is, which UCF never could get there, look how they're ranked 7th this early, if you will, or this late, however you want, I guess it would be late in the season. So that, you know, they're in a good ranking spot. Because now if you're the committee, okay, if Cincinnati keeps winning, when the CFP rankings come out, they're there. They're in the group, right? So you have to legitimately give them a chance. So as long as Cincinnati can take care of business and win out, and let's be honest, yeah, you have to have some eye test wins in there as well, right? And I think today's one with Memphis. They have to win today, but I think they got to, you know, to me, for the committee anyway, I think they need to win and win by a few touchdowns. And I think Cincinnati's defense is good enough, guys. It's the offense. I don't think Desmond Ridder has played up to his potential where he can. So it'll be interesting today. I think Memphis's offense is good once again, but I don't think they've played a defense like Cincinnati. So, but they have the ranking, Bubba, where they are right now at 7, that I think they're definitely in the conversation. So, but they have to take care of themselves. They got to win.
And you talk about Desmond Ridder. Granted, SMU is not the best of defenses, but still, Desmond Ridder really stepped up last week. Had what, about 180 yards rushing and 3 touchdowns?
Yeah, I think it was all late, right? Correct me if I'm wrong. It was like fourth quarter. The game was real tight, and then boom. I think he had like a 90 yard run late in the game, which sealed it. So that's what he can do. He can hurt you with your legs, and a lot of people don't give him that respect. But if they can get that offense cranked up a little bit, I think that defense is one of the best, if not the best, in the group of five. So I like where they're at. Again, I think they have a good chance in front of them. And you know, we talk, you know, for years we talk about UCF in the American. Again, I think their offense is phenomenal. Their defense has taken major steps back, I believe, this year. They play Houston today. That's another. That's a real interesting matchup. In the American today. So that there might be 200 points scored in that game today. Who knows? We'll see what happens.
Rennie, as far as when you're talking about Cincinnati, obviously the Pirates, they have to play the Pirates in 2 weeks. So we'll see how that unfolds. But
a lot of good football left, guys. That's for sure.
No doubt about it. One non-football question I was going to ask about COVID for you being in Orlando. And now you're not in Orlando today, but that's your hometown. How are you guys dealing with that? And one of these days, I've been promising my kids, I can't show them the Disney Channel right now, because if I have the Disney Channel on, the question is, Dad, when are you going to take us to Disney World?
Yeah, Disney World's open. So, you know, I fly out of Orlando International Airport and I walk right by where all the Disney buses are. And I'll tell you, it's not, normally it's packed. I mean, there's six buses and it's packed. It's not like that, but there's people coming in. It's open. People are going to the park. And I've talked to some people, and they actually said, besides, you know, you have to wear the mask. But they said, other than that, they said it's actually nice in that the lines aren't as long, right? So a lot of people are kind of taking advantage of the non-crowds, if you will. You know, life goes on. You know, like many of us around the country, we take care of ourselves. We do what we're supposed to. We obey laws and rules and regulations and just try to be good citizens, try to be good people. But we can't stop our, you know, we can't shut everything down. We have to go to work. I've worked every day. I know you guys have. And we just have to be sensible and get through it. And we will get through this thing. But, you know, we just got to keep trucking along. But thank you, Lord, for giving us college football. Because if we didn't have this year, I know, I'm speaking for myself and probably you guys too, I don't know, we would be a lot more depressed, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think that you would have to, Kyle is sleeping in this morning, but I was really worried about his mental health, right, Bubba? I was really worried about Kyle because this is his Super Bowl is college football as far as the whole season and following like 500 games every single day, every single Saturday or whatever day it is. He always has a college football game on, and I was really, really worried about him. And I'm saying that jokingly, but seriously, too, that he was losing it. He said, I'm losing my mind. That's the G-rated version, he was saying, because he really thought that there was going to be no football season.
Well, I think people got in a room, smarter heads got in a room. And listen, we have to give the SEC, ACC, and the Big 12 credit because they stayed their course. You know, I think the Big 10 disaster, we're seeing that play out because they could have been in a really good position like those other conferences I just mentioned to move games around, move games back, and now they're right up against it. And then, you know, just on a side note, you look at Nebraska, you know, they want to play an FCS team. They won't even let them do it. And, you know, it's kind of crazy when you think about Wisconsin, quote, they technically didn't meet the threshold to shut the game down, but they still were allowed to shut it down. And so now you're sitting there in your Nebraska and you're like, we want to play, at least let us play. UT Chattanooga, we got them tested. They're ready to go. And the conference says no. So it's like every time they do something right, they go two steps back. And it's like, come on, guys. And so it'll be interesting watching that conference here from here on out with no wiggle room whatsoever.
Well, it's perfect timing to move back to the Big 12, my friend. Move back to the Big 12. They'll let you play.
It'll be interesting to see what happens next year for sure.
Randy, before we let you go, I want to ask you about some of the national games with you being down in Texas today and some games take place in the Lone Star State. You have Texas A&M, Jimbo Fisher's club is up to eighth. You have an old Southwest Conference matchup with Arkansas. What a job Sam Pittman is doing there. And he has a tremendous staff with the Razorbacks. You got Kendall Briles as OC and then former Mizzou head coach Barry Odom as defensive coordinator.
Yeah, the thing I love about Arkansas and Sam Pittman is, again, I mentioned this with Coastal Carolina, that team, that program, looks like they're having fun again. Their fan base, and I mean, man, it's just, it's crazy the 180 they've done. And it just goes to show you, they have players on the team. They have athletes. So, yeah, that's a fascinating one. I think Texas A&M, though, I think Jimbo has probably heard it enough times how much money he makes. I was listening to a national radio show this week, and they broke it down. He makes, it's just crazy, Jimbo Fisher, $780,000 per game. So he's probably sick of hearing that. You know, he probably says he doesn't listen to it, but that's a team that I think this is a game they have to win, right? You cannot lose to Arkansas, but it's a dangerous game. I cannot wait to watch this one. But again, I mentioned Texas A&M earlier. They got that big win over Florida. So I think they're in a good position here. They already, you know, listen, they played Alabama. They're out, right? So they lost to Bama. So other than that, they can just look ahead of their schedule and they could be there. You know, you look up at the end of the season, you can see A&M sitting there with one loss if they take care of business. So that's one I definitely want to watch. But I, you know, I'm very happy for Arkansas, and their defense is playing some really good football. So I'm happy for their fan base, but that's going to be a fun one to watch.
And to the north, up in Stillwater, you have the sixth-ranked Cowboys hosting Texas. And do you think the Longhorns might pull that one off today?
Well, you know, I'm staying in Austin, which is just about 30 miles from San Marcos, where Texas State is. So I was listening to local radio. That's one of the things I always do when I get off the plane. I'll put on local radio station. And they were really breaking down the Longhorns. It was phenomenal. And if you listen to those guys, Texas has a legitimate chance to win this game up there in Stillwater. Oklahoma State's one we didn't mention, right, for the playoff. They're right there as well. They really have the best shot in the Big 12. So, but I listen, there's so much going on here for that Texas program, just on the field, off the field. So, I think Oklahoma State has enough weapons to get it done, but I think Texas can win the game. I think if Ellinger really – I think if they spread out Oklahoma State, if you see a lot of four wides and you spread out that Oklahoma State defense and Ellinger has a good day spreading it around and then hurting them with his feet, I think Texas can win that game.
Wow, that would be big. That program is amazing, but it goes to show, even though you have probably arguably, I would say, the most money in college football, especially from the athletic department standpoint, it just goes to show you could be like the New York Yankees, but that doesn't mean you're going to win the World Series every year.
Well, you got to get the right hires. And, you know, Tom Herman's a great coach, but he's been through a couple different coordinators now, right? A bunch of different assistant coaches. And just you look at the program and you go back, you know, they've put a couple coaches in there. And, you know, I think what people don't realize when you go to a program like Texas, it's so big. Not only for your family, I mean, the entire state. And there's just so many things as a head coach, your CEO, that you have to deal with outside of actually coaching the X and O's. And it does, it weighs heavily. And I think Tom Herman has seen that. I think every coach, you know, that's Charlie Strong dealt with it as well. I mean, so you deal with a lot of things off the field there. And again, with COVID and social justice, they're dealing with a lot of that stuff this year. But again, they have the athletes, they have the players. Can they have the game plan to go up to Stillwater and get the win? I think they can. But we'll see. That's why we love college football.
No question about it. Appreciate you coming on, Rennie. I know it's going to be a great game tonight. Are you, I guess you're always naturally caffeinated. So I guess you're going to run around the hotel a few times or get some pumps, some iron.
This is my first, it'll be 8 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock here. This is my first night game. I've had all noon games. So I've been up super early and just right to the stadium. So now I'm in at the Coastal games, 8 o'clock next week as well. So just, you know, I'm going to go grab a little breakfast, meet with my partner. I'm going to work with Mike Cousins tonight, another play-by-play guy that I've used to work with. So we'll talk about the game a little bit, get a little breakfast. I'll work out. And just now it's hurry up and wait, and I'll watch some games.
All right. Sounds good. But before we let you go, how can people follow you on social media?
Yeah, really just Twitter. It's at Rene Ingolia. You won't find another Rene Ingolia on there. It's Rene Ingolia. So once you start putting it in, even though you screw up the spelling, it'll pop up.
All right. We enjoyed it as always. Enjoy the visit. Look forward to the game tonight and even next week. And I look forward to the visit again real soon with us.
You got it. Talk to you guys later. Thank you.
All right. Appreciate take care. I appreciate Rennie very much. And Bubba, action packed show. Got another great guest now.
Yeah, he'll be joining us, and he stepped away back in green room. He'll be with us momentarily. Yeah. But, Alan Blondin, he is the beat writer for the Coastal Carolina Chanticleers. I know we've discussed that game some, but now we'll get an even better feel for it from someone who follows that program on a consistent basis day in, day out. So here in just a moment, we will catch up with Alan. It looks like Alan's ready to join us right now, and we will bring him in. Alan, we appreciate your time.
Yeah, gentlemen, thank you. I'm sorry get here late. I had a little trouble finding the link, but we're good.
No problem. Thank you. We appreciate you coming on. You're obviously in Atlanta getting ready for the game today, noon. We already talked to Mike Coy, the play-by-play voice on the call for ESPN, and you had the 20th-ranked Chanticleers taking on a very talented Georgia State club. First of all, let's just talk about the meteoric rise of the Chanticleers, first ever ranking in program history, and now you know, learning how to play with that ranking. We'll talk about Jamie Chadwell.
Yeah, they, you know, they just entered FBS, and, well, they had a whole transition. They joined the Sun Belt in 2017. They've only been – really, they've just gotten their 85 scholarships. This is kind of their first year to have a full scholarship. So they finished 3-9, 5-2, 5-7, 5-7. The first 3 years in the Sun Belt, 2-6 in the Sun Belt, the conference game. So they're 3-0, they're 5-0. They're having more fun than anybody I've ever seen in a locker room. That's kind of the crazy part about these guys is they celebrate a win like no other team has ever celebrated a win.
Yeah, you talk about that celebration. I saw that on social media last week, what took place after that victory over Georgia Southern. And obviously I saw the eagle and, you know, the kind of the wrestling theme there, but I did not realize until one of my state buddies told me that that was kind of a, you know, a play on what Georgia Southern does with their celebration.
Yeah, every week they play for a trophy. Like Jamie Chadwell assigns an assistant coach each before the season starts. He gives them each one game to pick a trophy. So they come up with the trophy for that game. It always has something to do with the opposing team. So Chad Lunsford has done a people's elbow on a chair, the coach at Georgia Southern. So the Coastal guys decided they would take the people's elbow on a chair a little further, and they did a orchestrated, you know, off-the-top rope atomic elbow wrestling scene. So, yeah, so that's how that all emanates. And each coach seems to be trying to outdo the other coach. And so they're getting a little wilder and wilder as they win. So if they keep winning and they go like 12-0, I don't know. I'm not quite sure what they're going to do after the 12th win.
Well, I've heard coaches say in the past, even former East Carolina coaches, that winning is a habit and so is losing. This particular case with Coastal, winning is a habit. And they seem to be on such a roll now. It's a season of which I'm sure that it's going by for you guys and the media beat writers, that the season when your team that you're covering is losing, it's an extra long season. It goes like 20 games or 25 games. I'm sure this year, even with COVID, it seems like it's even less.
They played 5 games, and the amount of national media attention on the program in the last 2 weeks since they first got ranked, Rivals, they did some stats even on, it actually has exceeded what Coastal received when they won the College World Series in baseball in 2016. So in 5 games, they've become like, the darlings of college football. That, you know, ESPN, Ryan McGee just wrote a nice story about him and Marty Smith. They've adopted the team as theirs. Yeah, they'll have a segment, I think, at 10 o'clock on game day that ESPN's and a crew. So, you know, they're not used to this. They finished, you know, 5-7 for a couple of years. And that's the best they've ever done in FBS. So it's been a real fun and interesting year considering the circumstances.
And this is a program that had success on some under David Bennett, who's a guy that had started at Catawba, where, you know, I'm about 10 miles south of Catawba College, Salisbury, North Carolina. But after him, you had Joe Moglia, that had a lot of success at the FCS level, and they were making out to North Dakota State and taking on those guys, making deep runs in the FCS playoff. But now with Jamie Chadwell and the success he had at Charleston Southern, now at Coastal, talk about his contract situation, what's his compensation, and give our listeners a glimpse at that of us something we were talking about earlier this morning, and we didn't have an answer.
I just wrote something about it. I went through his whole contract just to find out how much they would receive in bonuses, you know, which every FBS coach has. Jamie's base salary this year is $375,000, which is the very last in FBS, according to USA's report. So he's got up to, it would be the peak, but if they win the conference championship, win a bowl game, finish in the top 25, and hit a couple academic measures, they're up for $1.4 million in bonuses, him and his staff. So that's pretty, I mean, when your head coach is only making $375,000 and if they win a bowl game, top 25, and the conference championship, $1.4 million, that's pretty interesting on that part. Hopefully they get to go to this, the group of fives entry into the New Year's Six Bowls. That's worth a lot of money.
And Alan, I'm sorry, it was a little bit of lag there. Sorry about that. Kyle, our co-host, who's sleeping in this morning, shame on him. He brought up the fact that it'll be cool to see, even though I know Coastal has, this was preseason, it'll be really cool to see Coastal play East Carolina in the Myrtle Beach Bowl. Now they have bigger fish to fry right now.
Yeah, of course, the inaugural Myrtle Beach Bowl is being held December 21st in Myrtle Beach. They just named the date, announced the date at Coastal. Obviously, Coastal at this point has got their set sight pretty high. One real quick thing on Jamie Chadwell. Joe Moglia kind of handpicked him as a successor. They played each other a lot in the Big South at Charleston Southern. And Joe Moglia is actually still considered the executive director of football. He's got that title. So he oversees the football program, and him and Jamie still work together. But he played him when he was at, Coastal. Jamie was at Charleston Southern, and he was impressed by him, and he basically handpicked him. He stepped down a little early to elevate him to make sure they kept him. And that's how we're where we are now, kind of the vision of Joe Moglia and wanting Jamie Chadwell as his next coach.
Yeah, I remember when Jamie Chadwell was at Charleston Southern, and they played up at App State, and App State wasn't what they are now. But still, they went up there and dominated the Mountaineers, and that really exposed me to Jamie Chadwell.
Yeah, he makes it fun. I mean, some of the things he does are very interesting, like the whole allowing celebrations in the locker room where kids are posting that stuff on social media is kind of unique, I think, they're getting as much notoriety as who they're, how they goof around as they are for winning. And we'll see what they do today with they've got a target on their back now for 2 weeks in a row, and we'll see how they handle it.
That's what I was going to ask you, Alan, with earlier, and I forgot, is the very fact of how are they handling the pressure?
Yeah, up to now, they seem to be handling it well. They had to play a game last week without their starting quarterback. Their first game out, like I said, after getting this ranking, all the attention they got, and their starting quarterback ends up being out. And they end up, they beat Georgia Southern by 2 touchdowns last week. So that kind of showed a little bit of their resiliency, resolve. They do have a lot of senior leadership. It'd be hard to tell by watching their videos, but those guys orchestrating those videos are a couple of their leaders. So that tells you what direction they're going. But anyway, go ahead. I'll take your next question if you have any.
Yeah, for sure. There, Alan, as far as this program, where do you see this program going? Because obviously, you were talking about the baseball, we mentioned that earlier, winning it all in 2016. And obviously, I know if they could run the table, they could have the group of five, New Year's Six appearance. Where do you see this program heading? And you've been following the team for a while now. Where do you think they're going to go or could go?
Yeah, and again, it'll. you know, I think people in Myrtle Beach, I hope they realize that the attention that Coastal's receiving right now and the wins, and it doesn't always, it's not always as good, you know. So I think they need to take advantage of what they have this year for sure. They got to make sure they beat all the teams that they should beat for sure. And that would leave them with Appalachian State at home on November 21st and Liberty at the end of the year. So if they win the games they should win and would be favored in, it's going to come down to those two games to see what kind of season they end up having. You know, so, and then that'll kick in all those bonuses for Jamie as well. But yeah, to sustain this level of football at Coastal Carolina, we'll see. They just got to that scholarship level. It will require repeatedly good recruiting to sustain this, because they've got a lot of seniors that are running this. And the hold on one second. I got had on the tip of my tongue. Yeah, we'll see what they've just done now, this little run they've had, 5-0, top 25 2 weeks in a row. That'll probably help their recruiting as much as anything, no matter what happens for the rest of the year. So they should have a good chance of sustaining this level of athlete and play moving forward.
And Alan, as far as you being the beat writer for the Sun-Times, is that helps sell newspapers? Is like the editor saying, hey, hey, Alan, your team is winning now, so we're selling more newspapers.
I wish newspapers were still being sold. I'll be honest. our newspapers are limited in sales. Most of the stuff we do is just for online for the most part, you know. But there's definitely been an uptick in the readership of my articles that I put up on Facebook and Twitter. Whenever I write something, there's been a certain uptick in the readership of those. So the national attention they're getting is, bringing national attention to our newspaper a little bit more also.
Speaking of which, before we let you go, Alan, I appreciate the time. I know you're busy getting ready for the game. How can people follow your work?
So it easily as it would be on Twitter. It's just at Alan Blondin. And you guys have my name spelled correctly. So if anybody just goes to at Alan Blondin on Twitter, that's my feed. That'd be the easiest place to find it. And MyrtleBeachOnline.com is our website.
All right. Thank you so much. Good luck to Coastal Carolina the rest of the way, and love to have you back on again on the show real soon.
Yes, sir. Thank you. And I apologize again for being a little bit late this morning.
You're all good. You're all good. All
right. Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye. All right. That's Alan Blondin there. The Inside Slant continues. And, man, Coastal Carolina's had that nice run, a nice story. And, of course, early in the show, we talked about the Liberty Flames and what they're doing in Lynchburg has been Hugh Freeze is such a great coach for sure. And so those are two teams we're keeping an eye on. And how about the story out in Provo and Utah with BYU? I love those guys and hope at some point they can be a conference mate. But they have had a huge run this season, and they're living up to their brand name that they have, winning a title in 84. You would think that they would get another shot at some point. It doesn't look like it'll be this season, unfortunately, but it is what it is. Bubba, I know that we got another great team. Dave,
interesting nugget as far as BYU is concerned. I saw this on the bottom line on ESPN last night during our game, I guess it was, that the Cougars have outscored the opposition by more than any other team, with the exception of Clemson. They outscored the opposition by something like 180 points.
It's crazy, and I really like that team. Obviously, I'm not a fan as far as pulling for that team, but what they've done over the years, their brand name, and like I said, for the American, I wish we could get them, and Boise and maybe Air Force. I have a 14-team league, but that's a whole nother show, shall we say. A team that we're talking about making the playoffs is Cincinnati. I know, Bubba, you and Kyle had a chance to sit down with Chad Brindle, right?
Yeah, we caught up with Chad Brindle, and we've obviously had Chad on the show numerous times before, talking both football and basketball. We caught up with him on Friday afternoon late and to discuss today's matchup with the 3-1 Memphis Tigers coming to Nippert Stadium. And we'll go to that interview with Chad Brindle right now.
All right, here we go. We continue on with the Inside Slant, previewing week 9 of college football, a big game in the American taking place at Nippert Stadium as we have the 7th-ranked Cincinnati Bearcats taking on the Memphis Tigers. And right now, to preview that one, we're very excited to welcome back into the program from the Bearcat Journal, Chad Brindle. Chad, appreciate you joining us again.
Not a problem. Always a pleasure to be on, gentlemen.
We have 7th-ranked Cincinnati, 4-0, taking on 3-1 Memphis. Of course, last year, these two teams met in consecutive weeks, with Memphis winning close ball games in each of those. First of all, before we dive into this one, let's just talk about what Cincinnati did down in Dallas, really dominating that game, particularly in the second half against SMU.
Yeah, I mean, it was strength on strength, or that was the billing for that matchup, and turned out Cincinnati's strength was quite a bit better than SMU's strength. Cincinnati has been just incredible defensively this year, and if not for a rash of penalties in the second half, SMU wouldn't move the ball. Shane Buechel just never found a rhythm, never got comfortable. You could tell with the way that how physical Cincinnati was with the SMU receivers that it was a miracle. By the middle of the second half, it seemed like all of their arms shrunk 3 or 4 inches. They did not want to make challenge catches, and Cincinnati took them out of their comfort zone offensively, and they got things going on the ground. Des Ritter played up to his potential, ran for 171 yards, 3 touchdowns rushing, a touchdown passing, and that's what we expected Cincinnati's offense to look like this year. And their defense is one of the top 5 defenses in college football right now.
Yeah, it was impressive. Anytime I would turn it over to that game, and since SMU looked like they were about to do something, Cincinnati would just bow up. I mean, y'all's defense looked as physical as anybody I've watched play this year. And as you move forward this week to Memphis, you know, I actually think Memphis should probably be in the top 25 also. I know they lost to SMU. But it was a really close, hard-fought football game. And, Memphis has some COVID issues coming into that game. And from a physical standpoint, I think Memphis is more physical than SMU.
Yeah, I think Memphis is 26. So, I mean, they're right on the cusp. They are a little bit more physical than SMU. Their styles offensively are very similar. And this just isn't my partner Dave that I do the Bearcat Journal podcast with came up with this stat yesterday that kind of blew my mind. From those two AAC, the final regular season game and then the AAC title game, Memphis is returning a grand total of 1 catch for 4 yards.
Wow.
So without Coxie, who opted out, and then Kenneth Gainwell opted out, their running back that was I thought was going to be the best player in the conference this year. They've got a lot to replace, and Cincinnati was able to hold that offense, as explosive as it was, Cincinnati was able to hold that offense in check a little bit last year in those two games. So, if they can keep on the trajectory that they're on, I think Memphis is going to have a really difficult time moving the football. And you know, as long as Cincinnati doesn't turn it over, I think they're going to be in a good spot to win this game. But, you know, these two teams, it's pretty close in terms of talent. Although Memphis' defense has taken a pretty significant step back. I mean, I think right now, in terms of total yards, they're ranked last in FBS. That could be a product of playing SMU and UCF already. But they've got some issues defensively, so – if Cincinnati's defense is on point, I think this is a game Cincinnati should be able to win.
Yeah, Chad, you talk about everything that was lost for Memphis in terms of the offensive production. One thing you do return is Brady White, your quarterback.
Yeah.
Or excuse me, their quarterback. 1,300 yards, 17 touchdowns to just 4 picks. So he's been very good thus far. And then you talked about the loss of Gainwell at running back, him choosing to opt out. Rodriguez Clark is averaging over 100 yards per game.
Yeah, I mean, they're still going to – they've got an effective system offensively. So, against most teams, they're going to still be effective. And Brady White's a winner. I mean, that – you know, you look at that kid's career at Memphis, and that's what the numbers tell you. The kid knows how to win football games. He's an effective passer. He's an efficient passer. He can push the ball down the field. He's got a really good feel, and this is something Luke Fickell talked about in his weekly press conference. Brady White has a really good feel on the RPO throw. He doesn't have to have his feet set. He doesn't have to be in perfect rhythm. If he sees it, he gets it out and gets it complete. And that's something you kind of have to do against a defense that is as physical and aggressive as Cincinnati's. You want to get to them before they get to you, right? You want to get the pass completed before they get their hands on you, before they can really, you know, put you in that blender that they do defensively. So, Memphis presents some problems that I don't think SMU presented in terms of that, you know, quickness. Because Shane Buechele and Brady White are, you know, right there with probably Gabriel as the top quarterbacks in this league, Holt Nailers. I mean, there's a lot of good quarterbacks in this league, but the one thing that separates Brady White is he wins a lot.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, I was about to ask a minute ago, were you surprised at the 12 o'clock kick? It seems like with the magnitude of this game and what it means to the American that it would have got a little bit better time slot on ESPN.
I'm not surprised. As long as it got the ESPN nod, I'm not all that surprised. I think that probably trumps, you know, moving it to a later time slot. And really that noon time slot, if you're on ESPN, you get the lead in from College Game Day. You're going to get a pretty big following, especially here. Ohio State plays Penn State at 7:30. So that would get a lot of eyes in Ohio otherwise. And I think with, you know, this game being at in the noontime slot, I think it works out pretty well. I would have preferred what we get next week with Houston at 3:30. But, you know, the noontime slot on ESPN isn't terrible. It's better than noon on the Ocho.
We talked about that. Yeah, that's true. And also the negative to the 12 noon slot to me has always been fan attendance. And I guess that really isn't an issue in 2020.
Well, that, I mean, it's going to be a little bit of a detriment for Memphis if you think about it, because they're central time zone. So that's going to be an 11 a.m. kickoff for Memphis. And it's a little chilly here. I think the high tomorrow is in the low 50s. So those Memphis guys might not be real fond of getting up bright and early and hopping out into the cold to play a football game.
We talk about a matchup with the explosive Memphis offense against a very stout Cincinnati defense, but how about that rushing attack that produced over 300 yards last week against SMU? How do you see the Bearcats offense faring against Memphis?
Memphis is similar to what we've seen from SMU, a little bit kind of flip-flopped in that Memphis is really struggling against the pass this year. They've been pretty stout against the run. I think what that game did, though, what we were seeing, because Desmond Ridder had not run the ball, and we talked about this the last time I was on, I think, Desmond Ridder had not been looking aggressively to run the ball, either when the pocket collapsed or when he had an RPO. He was handing it off more often than not and leaving some looks open on the backside when the end was crashing. He took advantage of those opportunities against SMU, and now Memphis has to plan for that. Right, Memphis now has to look and say, this guy just ran for 171 yards and three touchdowns last week. Like, we've got to be ready for whatever he, you know, is going to bring at us in the running game. So I think that opens some things up in the quick passing game. They're going to have to keep somebody on that backside to keep an eye on Desmond Ridder. And it should open up some things in the running game as well for Jared Doakes and Jerome Ford, their top two backs. The one thing that will impact this a little bit, I think, is Cincinnati's kind of change of pace back, their speed guy, Charles McClellan. He tore his left ACL prior to the season last year. And on punt coverage against SMU last week, he tore his right ACL. So that stinks for the kid. But so that takes away kind of that speed, change of pace, passing threat out of the backfield that they had. So that can change things up a little bit.
Yeah, I got a big picture question that I'm going to drop out of this interview a little bit early, but Bearcats coming in this week, I believe at number 7. I know the playoff poll it hasn't started coming out yet. I guess that'll be out probably this week or next week.
No, it's middle of November, like November 14th, okay. I think.
Okay, so a couple weeks from now. What do you think the chances are that Cincinnati can finish in the top four? I think it's possible. When you look at what's out there and you realize, you know, Alabama and Georgia are likely going to play each other again, and if Bama beats them twice, I think it's going to be real hard to justify Georgia getting in. Ain't nobody else from the ACC getting in besides Clemson.
Well, Notre Dame, maybe.
Well, maybe, but I think they're going to get smoked by Clemson.
I do, too. The Lawrence thing obviously raises some questions, but we'll see.
To me, the biggest cog is Oklahoma State. You know, can Oklahoma State go undefeated? I think if they do, you know, just assuming Ohio State goes undefeated, I think if Oklahoma State goes undefeated, that keeps the Bearcats out. But if Oklahoma State loses one or even two, and Cincinnati runs the table, I like your chances to be the first team from the group of five to make the playoff.
Yeah, I mean, like we saw yesterday with the Trevor Lawrence stuff breaking. I mean, the biggest thing to this season is get to the finish line, right? I mean, if you can get there undefeated, anything can happen because you have no clue where things are going to be, you know, in a week or a day. We don't know. Something could pop tonight. I know a lot of teams test, do the rapid testing on Friday. You could have something hit tonight. You know, what happens, Ohio State, you know, Justin Fields positive or anything around the country right now can throw everything, especially in the Big Ten where it's 20 days if a guy gets a positive. So they're definitely, the thing that was important was starting ranked. And then when they took all of those Big Ten and Pac-12 teams out of the rankings when we thought they weren't going to play, it has an impact, I think, on voters. And the voters don't matter. Well, you know, the playoff committee is what matters. But I think it has an impact to normalize kind of a team being up there when Cincinnati starts at 13 or 15 or wherever, you know, a couple of those places have them. And now they're moving up, you know, one spot or two spot. It's not like, you know, how Central Florida had to do it in the beginning when they had to come from unranked and then fight their way all the way into the top 10. This is a little bit different of an environment where Cincinnati's starting highly ranked and has the ability to hang around if they continue winning. So I think that's the key to it is just keep stacking W's and who knows what's going to happen around you. At this point, all you can do is hope to get to the finish line intact. And if you do that with an undefeated record, you're going to have a chance to be in the playoff.
Chad, going back to something that we talked about off the air before we started recording, give our listeners and viewers the latest in terms of the crowd size at Nippert Stadium. What can happen this weekend?
They've announced that there will not be it's not open to the public for the rest of the season. So that covers this week, next week with Houston, and then the following week as East Carolina comes to town. What they're allowing is every student athlete gets, or every football player gets four tickets to distribute. So, you know, 400 people roughly from that. The coaches get to bring their families. I don't know if they've limited Luke Fickell and Marcus Freeman on the number of their kids that they're allowed to bring. That would, you know, that's a significant jump in attendance. I don't know if you know this or not, but Fickell has 6 kids and Freeman has 6 kids.
No, I had no idea.
Fickell has 2 sets of twin boys.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah, his wife has his hands full. Or her handful, yeah. Excuse me.
Very much so, very much so. And then I think the only change this week is that they have decided that they're going to allow, because, and it makes sense because they're being tested constantly, they're going to allow the other student athletes on campus into the football game to hopefully provide a little bit more atmosphere. But as it is right now, a couple hundred for UC. I think 100 is the number of visitor tickets that they give out. So in the, with the band and dance team, you're still talking probably under 1,000 people at Nippert Stadium for the remainder of the season.
And you referenced in your answer there the three consecutive home games starting tomorrow with Memphis, then you have Houston, then East Carolina. After that, due to the postponement of the Tulsa game, which is supposed to take place, guess what was it? Was that last week or two weeks ago?
Yeah.
Then you have three consecutive road games to finish, including a game at UCF, and then on December 5th at Tulsa, and then the week prior to that at Temple. What's your take on the remaining schedule for the Bearcats?
Obviously because they lost in the conference championship, the Memphis game is one that they've had circled on the schedule from the day that it came out. I expect them to be very amped up and ready for this game tomorrow or today. Sorry. If you look, Houston has always worried me a bit because that, you're coming off a big game with Memphis. You just had a big game with SMU, two national spotlight type games. And if you look, Houston kind of sneakily played pretty well so far this season. So that one I'm a little bit concerned about. ECU, we saw that this defense get lit up by ECU last year in a performance that was unlike any other than Ohio State. ECU was really the one team that gave them fits. So it'll be interesting to see if that's a matter of they figured something out in this scheme that they like to attack, or if Marcus Freeman, comes up with a new plan of action against that ECU offense. And then UCF in the bounce house, it doesn't matter what COVID's doing. They're going to have 30,000 people in the bounce house, I assume. That's how UCF rolls. So that one's going to be very difficult. Stopping them offensively 2 years in a row is a challenge. We don't know much about Temple yet because they just started playing. I need to see a little bit more for them. But then Tulsa, I think, is a team that's made very much in the image of Cincinnati. I just think Cincinnati is farther along in that progression. So some interesting games. I mean, the American is not an easy walk this year, especially as you get into, the Memphis and Houston and UCF. And now you got to add Tulsa into that mix as well. Four tough games at least. And like I said, ECU gave this defense fits last year.
Yeah, they'll certainly be on a mission to reverse that result from last year in Greenville for sure. And you talk about C.J. Johnson for East Carolina. He had 12 catches for 283 yards in that game. Thus far this season, he only has 7 catches. So will be very interesting to see. Hopefully the Pirates, for our sake, we can get him going tonight against Tulsa.
Yeah, I mean, the one big difference is that was kind of the last game before Cincinnati moved Ahmad Gardner into the starting spot. And Ahmad Gardner went from unknown to freshman All-American and preseason. Some places had him first and second team All-American coming into this year, depending on where you looked. So he would definitely have a different look on him with Ahmad Gardner in his vicinity this year. So, but that was the matchup that ECU just continued to pick at and pick at and pick at all game last year, and UC had no answer.
As always, Chad, really enjoyed the visit. Appreciate your insight into tomorrow's matchup or today's matchup. Hey, now we both did it, but
this is not pre-recorded.
Not at all. But. But before we let you go, go ahead and plug Bearcat Journal and tell folks how they can read your work as well as listen to your podcast.
Find us at bearcatjournal.com. You can look for me on Twitter. Look for me on Apple and SoundCloud, either Chad Brendel or Bearcat Journal. You can find the podcast there. Bearcatjournal.com gives you all the latest info on the team, who we're playing, and all the latest recruiting info for the University of Cincinnati as well. So check it out.
All right, here we continue the Inside Slant. There, Chad Brendel, Cincinnati doing very well, and Bubba very excited about, obviously, the end of the season. We'll come back on here. But this next few games, we'll see how Cincinnati does. But It's going to be a great day of college football. I know that I appreciate your hard work, as always, my friend. And I know that we've had a really long day and then basically a nap. And I know there's going to be a lot of exciting games as we talked about and discussed. And we'll talk a couple more minutes and get out of here.
Yeah, a tribute here to the Williamson legend and East Carolina, former East Carolina director of high school relations, Harold Robinson, with the ceiling fan there. anybody that's watched it when H-Rod.
I didn't know where you were going. I thought it was actually you were being sincere, like something he gave to you.
Yeah, anybody that's watched the show when H-Rod's been on knows what I'm talking about. So. I know right now if Josh Smith was tuned in, he would definitely be laughing. But H-Rob, what a great guy, one of a kind for sure, and look forward to having him back on the show soon. But as far as the games today, I'm looking forward to the Cincinnati-Memphis game. Also looking forward to that Coastal-Georgia State matchup. And then on a national scale as well, you know, in the Big 12, we've talked about that Oklahoma State-Texas game. I'm very interested to see if they can live up to the number 6 billing. And can Penn State bounce back? They're hosting Ohio State in Happy Valley tonight. I'm not sure. But
8 o'clock?
Yeah, I couldn't recall the game time on that one, but I knew it was prime time. And we'll see if James Franklin's ball club can give the Buckeyes a scare.
That'll be really interesting. And I know there's a lot of teams like Cincinnati. Luke Fickell, I know, is a Ohio State guy. But, man, that would you have some of those teams to fall, and especially fall early, or definitely earlier than, you know, the end of, like, say, Thanksgiving. You definitely would maybe – who knows what's going to happen with Cincinnati, but – definitely a great thing. I tell you, Bubba, I definitely need to see how many points I have. I think I get a free pizza with Domino's because I've been ordering Domino's a lot with the what I like to do is on a Saturday. I don't know about you, and then we'll wrap it up, but I like to get my big screen, which I have it's actually to my left, a 65-inch TV, and I have a couch and recliner. And then get Domino's pizza. I'm so lazy that I get some Domino's pizza for lunch and some wings and some soda and just enjoy myself.
Yeah, I didn't know if this was going to be a commercial for Bostic Suggs Furniture or where you were going with that.
Well, hey, if I'll be glad to do live reads. We'll be glad to. We are the best podcast and the original podcast of the Pirates, unofficial podcast of the Pirates, and we appreciate all the listeners and viewers, obviously. And I tell you what, anytime people want to advertise, you and I are both businessmen, so is Kyle. We'll be glad to. I know, Bubba, we can put that right on the screen. Any business that wants to do that, then I'm all ears, like Ross Perot said many years ago. By the way, too, Bubba, before I forget, are you kids? I wanted to ask you at the beginning of the show, and we had a jump right in there with Mike Corey. Are you guys happy Halloween to you? Trick or treat? Are you guys trick or treating? Or no, we're actually
not unless it's something strictly family. With everything's going on, we're not gonna take any chances. But may do something with the immediate, I say immediate family, extended family, and cousins and that kind of thing. I don't know.
Yeah. By the way, we're gonna have some popcorn and. The kids are going to watch some kids movies, but certainly Charlie Brown, that special, by the way, not on network television, folks. You have to find that out free. Hey, Bubba, our free 99, right? You and I love free 99. Who doesn't? But they have the special on Apple TV. So if you're looking for the Charlie Brown special, you'll have to get it on stream it on Apple TV. You can get it on your tablets and stuff, but it definitely will be on there tonight. All right, Bubba, you have anything before we go?
Couple other things very quickly. Okay. Wisconsin Athletic Director Barry Alvarez, obviously former head coach of the Badgers as well. But Coach Alvarez said that Wisconsin now has 22 positives, including 10 staff members. Now, I don't know if that's strictly coaching staff or, other support staff, but nonetheless, whichever the case, it's not good up in Madison. And then the last thing I would say is, I don't think we've even mentioned this game, and but up in Morgantown today, number 16 K-State, and they're actually a 5-point dog to West Virginia. So keep an eye on that one. K-State, who has won 4 straight, including that game at Oklahoma, you know, since they were upset by Arkansas State in Manhattan in their season opener. That game's 12 o'clock on ESPN2, so I'm getting give that one a look and see if K-State can stay right there. Obviously, they'll still be, not having lost in the Big 12, they'll still be very much in the hunt, but should Oklahoma State be upset by Texas today and K-State can take down West Virginia, that would put them in the driver's seat going into the second half of the conference schedule.
That's crazy. It's nuts, but welcome to 2020. Speaking of 2020, we'll get out of here. Folks, please be safe out there. When we have Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's, the holiday parties, please don't have those big parties. We want to. I work on the front lines every day, and the numbers in the Midwest, you were talking about Wisconsin, that's what reminded me to say it. The numbers in the Midwest bubble right now are exploding. Please, 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 social distance. Do the family thing virtual. Like I have my brothers right here that we do the show, and we don't get together. We're actually in different parts of the state of North Carolina, and we're social distancing. We've been doing that for a few years now, but please, please, please be careful, okay? We'll get out of here, and thanks, Bubba, your hard work, man. It seems like you and I have been up for many hours since I was up at 6 o'clock yesterday morning and had a little bit of a nap. So we're going to get out of here, watch some college football. Enjoy the games, folks, and we'll have some great programming coming up next week as we get ready for Tulane. Until the meantime, enjoy college football, and we'll be back. You've been watching and listening to The Inside Slant right here on The Sports Objective. Good day, everybody. I enjoy watching football, and as always, go Pirates.